I'm Christian Ashley, and you're listening to the Why I Don't Like podcast, a proud NSL Ministries podcast. Welcome, everyone, back to the Why I Don't Like podcast. I'm your host, Christian Ashley, here to entertain you as I sit down and record episodes on the media that I consume, and yet I don't like. Guys, you are knocking it out of the park. As far as engagement with the show goes, I am in complete and utter awe at what you are capable of doing and the fact that in with just one episode on someone who has not promoted this nearly at all, we got over 100 views and listens on the multiple media platforms that this is on. So yeah, kudos to you guys, because no other solo project that I've done has ever quite gotten to that point. And I'm extremely happy to hear that and to see it those numbers. Now I'm also being like, okay, well, maybe it's just the first episode, it'll go down. I'm trying not to be negative Nancy about it. But yeah, guys, you're the best. Thank you for everything that you do here. I am really looking forward to what else we're going to be doing with the show. So enough of that. I do need to start with a correction. In the last episode, I made a mistake, one that, well, I mean, you could argue I didn't know and all that mess, but we'll just go with what's happening here. Special thank you to listener All About Reading on YouTube for pointing out that the scene in episode one, where we do see baby Rudeus attempting to grope Xena's breasts, is an anime original scene that does not happen in the original web novel and light novel. So as far as things go there, that's not part of Rudeus's actual characterization, not part of his true self in the light novel, web novel, as far as that scene goes. Now, however, knowing Rudeus as I do from watching the anime and hearing what other people have to say about him in a light novel, I don't see that as out of character, but it is not the original author's fault that the anime intended to portray him that way. So I'm not trying to backpedal and say, well, really, I was right. No. All About Reading, thank you again for correcting me on that. And guys, if there's anything else that I ever say on here that is obviously wrong, and you know it's wrong, tell me. Get me to make that correction. I am more than happy to do that. So without any further ado, we're going to get into this sucker. We're going to be continuing into Mushoku Tensei Jobless Reincarnation, focusing on Season 1, Part 1, Episodes 3 to 4. And thank you, everyone, again, I should have added this earlier, for being extremely understanding that there were not going to be edits to this. And I know since I listened to it myself, there's obvious things, man, I wish I could have taken that out. There's too much of a pause there. But you know what? Without edits, they're just going to be in there. So most of the people I've gotten responses from in that regard have been like, yeah, we get it. Just, you know, you're not an editor. Just move on. You don't need to discuss it too much like I'm doing right now. So I'm going to start like I would always like to do with this show. This show called Why I Don't Like, I'm going to start with something that I do like. And something that I do like is Earth Abides by George R. Stewart. That is, oh, I should have had an image up on that. Oh, well, too bad. Hindsight and all that mess. This is a post-apocalyptic novel written in 49, if I remember correctly, where essentially humanity just isn't able to live as they should. There's a huge disease that happens, and people are unable to live outside of a select few who are immune. And it's a question of how do we rebuild society? What does it mean? How does religion factor into things? How does our propaganda factor into things? What are they going to believe about America now that the world is essentially gone? And is it possible to maintain civilization, or are they going to devolve in a certain sense to different cultures that don't rely on the things that we look at as good here? Yeah. See, if you guys haven't read Earth Abides, I highly suggest you do. Excellent book. And with that, we're going to be heading into episode 3, entitled A Friend. So after Roxy has left in the last episode, Rudeus watches his parents getting affectionate with each other as he asks to play outside, which they heartily agree to. Paul had been afraid that he was a sickly child, which Rudeus denies, saying that he'll carry on the great gray rat name, which makes Paul suggest he do so by bringing home a girlfriend or two. Stay classy, Paul. Rudeus tells him that he'll bring one like Zenith, which makes her happy. And Paul then tells him to be kind to people, as a man's strength isn't for pushing people around, which Rudeus tells him it's actually for showing off to girls, to which Paul agrees until he backtracks a bit, and Rudeus then says it's actually for defending the weak, which is something that Paul has been teaching him. Now, we're going to go through some interesting arcs for Paul in these episodes alone. I'm kind of glad they kind of align together in that sense. Paul is an interesting figure, but that's that. So let's pause there, see what's going on. And in this regard, let's look at the parenting so far. Zenith is your typical kind of very kind, calm, collected mother who really only gets angry if something goes wrong. She's not really coddling Rudy too much. It's kind of obvious she favors him, you know, since he is a fellow mage like her. But I don't have too much to say against her. Now we get to Paul. And Paul, through these episodes, is a very fascinating figure, a very scummy figure, and in fact is called so in the show itself. But it's this mixed bag of characterization for him, of motivations. Like, he's saying things to a child who around this point is six-ish. I really should have looked at the ages before this. And six or seven. Yeah, it's going to be seven because at one point we get a letter that says it's been 2 years since Roxy left. So there's that. And he's saying things to a seven-year-old that you kind of, I don't know about that, man. You may want to temper yourself. You might want to be a better parent. And hey, no first-time parent is ever going to be the best. And even with the second or third child, you're still going to screw up along the way. But Paul's not really helping matters with what he does. But that's it for that right now. Let's go to life lessons. Life lessons Paul teaches. Keeping in mind that this is a world, and we'll get to this later on discussing it more in full, where polygamy is expected. And from what I can tell, it's more male-dominated in that regard, as we would typically see throughout even our own world's history. And Paul's idea of what to do for his about 7-year-old son is to tell him, hey, if you want to make the gray rat name great, you better bring home a girlfriend or two at seven. Now, this is also in line with, this is more medieval period, of course. Your life expectancy isn't going to be as high. I'm guessing with magic, that kind of bumps up the numbers a little bit, but I still don't think that they're anywhere on par with us. So you would typically marry younger. I mean, you would marry around 13, 14. Maybe you would wait as far as 18. So by our standards, we go, oh, they're just babies. They can't do that. But by the standards of the time, that's when you got married. Now, that's not right. It's not wrong. It's just the times that they were in. So, yeah, Paul does need to be teaching him, you know, the difference between men and women and all that mess, but from a different way. And he goes to his, what's the word I'm looking for, his playboy lifestyle, which he appears at this point in time to have given up in favor of staying faithful to Zenith. But we'll get to that in a moment. So, yeah, Paul, fascinating character, not exactly the person I'd go to for, you know what, I would go to Paul for advice on life, and I'd discard the bad advice and then listen to the good advice because he's a mixed bag. So move on from there to the next part of the episode, where Rudeus starts walking through town, saying hello to people as the opening plays. And it's a very nice opening. And in fact, I was taken aback when I watched this the first time not too long ago, when there's not an actual typical anime opening. It's actual drawn scenes of the show of more downtime action for the characters as they go about their lives. So nothing normally happens that's immense in size or causes you to not pay attention to the music. But it works really well. And I actually really like that. in how they do it. In our latest season, we do get an actual anime opening. It was kind of jarring at the beginning, which I've gotten used to it, but it's kind of like, oh, well, why didn't you just stick with what you were doing? I kind of like that change from the usual formula. So as that happens, he mentions taking care of Roxy's holy relic, and if you've forgotten, that's a pair of her panties that he stole from her before she left. Our main character, everyone. And he overhears some boys as he's walking along attacking someone and calling that person a demon. Now, this upsets Rudeus. Obviously, he's got his own hang-ups about bullying, and in general, it's just a good idea to be sticking up for people who are being beset by antagonistic people like this. So he intervenes by using some water magic, not to hurt anyone, but kind of just propels it into their faces and gets them to run away, you know, saying that a 3-on-1 is unfair, and this makes them leave. Rudeus then goes to the kid that they abused and asks if they're okay, as he sees them for the first time, thinking that they're a boy, making an inappropriate Shotokan comment. Yeah. So, last time, on the last episode of Why I Don't Like Z, we discussed Lolicon. Lolicon is a romantic interest in young girls. Shotokan is a romantic interest in young boys, typically from a female perspective. But as we know, there are many people who, far too many, who gravitate to either side of that, regardless of whether they're men or women. So this is yet another example of the scumbag that Rudeus is coming out. His first reaction to seeing someone he does not know the name of, by the way, yet, is to think, oh, yeah, he's kind of a, you know, Shotokan. The girls will be all over. So he cleans their hair. And all these vague pronouns are killing me because I know who this actually is, but we'll get there when we get there. And notices that they have green hair. And he remembers Roxy's warnings about the Superb. But when he goes around to inspect, he notices that they don't have a gem on their head, but that they're an elf, seeing the ears. So the kid says that they don't know what they are, but the dad is a half-elf. And they ask Rudeus why he helped them, to which he refers to Paul's teaching. So good on you, Paul. I forgot to mention that last time, in that Paul did stay to stand up for the weak. Excellent strategy. That's what strength is actually useful for. And says, hey, we're friends now. As he comments that one day the girls will be all over this kid, and maybe he'll get some too as a result. The sloppy seconds. He doesn't say that, but it's the intent. Rudeus then asks them their name, which they give as Sylph, and there's going to be more to that, but they are interrupted by the wind, which makes Rudeus comment about the wind spirit of the Sylphs that's typically from European folklore that gets taken over to Japan. Now, you'll see it all over in RPGs of your gnome, your Sylph, salamander. What's the other one? Oh, gosh, what's the water one? Nereids. Oh, I'm going to kill myself for not remembering this. Yeah, correct me in the comments below on what I can't remember right now. But it's something that they took from European folklore that then transposed into a Japanese ideal. It happens all the time. And so he would be familiar with it. So I'm okay with that. It makes perfect sense. And in the midst of this, Rudeus kind of realizes that he's never played with anyone either in this world. So they have this common bond where they don't really have friends. And as they bond, as they play together, Sylph asks him to teach magic to them. Let's go with Rudeus's growth. The Rudeus of the beginning of this season is not going to be outside, is not going to talk with people and be friendly to them. I mean, he may see someone being bullied, but I don't see the Rudeus before his interactions with Roxy protecting Sylph in this way. So this is huge. And I do like that. I like to see the way that he has grown, and he has. There's still plenty of room for improvement. But this is still not the Rudeus of episode 1. And I do appreciate that. And as someone, I mean, I've never really had to deal with bullying. I talked about it last episode, but just for me, but as far as other people, I haven't had to deal with it too much outside of like people being catty. Never any like physical altercations that I can recall. While I was in that same age group with them. Now, as an adult, working in schools at certain parts in time, and I have had to step in between people who are about to start a fight, but not in, like, bullying or anything like that. So, once again, it's just, I'm sure it happens. I just haven't been around to see it. So, good on Rudy Astaire for doing that. And then we get to the Shota Khan. Shota, if I didn't say it earlier, just means young boy or something like that. I don't know what the difference between that and shonen is, because shonen also means young boy in Japanese. I'm not a Japanese language expert. No habla Nihongo. So just take what I can get there. We come to this point where Rudeus has already shown one half of the equation. So to be an equal opportunity offender, he brings this up. It was just meeting this person, who we're going to find out more about them later on, for Sylph, assumes male, and assumes that when they grow up, all the girls are going to be all over him. And then maybe I can get some of the ones that don't, some that Sylph rejects. They're 6 or 7 right now. Sylph isn't thinking about this, you know, because why? Because Sylph is a child. Now, Rudeus, at this age, if I'm remembering my numbers correctly, he was 34 when he died. So he's mentally 41. And if I get those numbers wrong, please correct me. So, of course, he's thinking about this because his mind is a little different. Makes sense. But to go to this length, to make a note and say, you know what? When this kid grows up, they're probably going to be attractive to other people. That's not exactly a bad thing. There are plenty of people who will take that in very bad directions. But to notice that initially, that's not a bad thing. But the way Rudeus just has to take everything to 11 in the wrongest sense possible, it's just not fun. So there's that. I don't like it. I don't like the lolicon stuff from before. I don't like the Shotokan stuff here. It's a part of Japanese culture that astonishes me that it keeps happening over and over again in media. Not in everyone, every anime ever made or every manga ever made or every movie ever made, but still, it's like, why? Who are you catering to? And where are their numbers so we know what to do with them? So going back to the episode proper, Rudeus gets back home to see that Paul is upset. And thinks that he's found the holy relic, not thinking, oh, man, what? Maybe I just came back too late and he's mad that I'm late. But no, it's actually because he heard that Rudeus hit Somal, one of the kids in town who was bullying Sylph, which makes him smirk. And this causes Paul to get angry. And he refuses to listen to Rudeus's explanations. Now, Rudeus talks back to him and gets smacked. And Rudeus chastises him for doing this. And in this moment of shock of him, of Paul doing it, and Rudeus talking back to him again, Rudeus is able to finally explain what happened. So Paul apologizes, and they go inside, and Paul reflects on the incident with Zenith, telling her that if he told Rudeus to leave, no, he probably would have. Which Zenith brings up is exactly what he did. When he's just a little bit older than Rudeus, as Paul realizes, you know, he never really reconciled with his own dad. And one thing I kind of want to bring up here, the theme of some of these episodes, especially these two, are like people as parents. How they're able to do stuff. So it seems like from Paul's own background, he didn't have the most supportive dad, who was very kind to him, very loving to him. Now, this is just from Paul's side of things, so there may be something we're not seeing because we're very limited in our points of view here. But conversely, we have Zenith, who is way more understanding, way more kind, and understanding this scenario. And we get to how Paul treats Rudeus initially, which I don't like. But the show for sure is showing that this is not a good thing. Instead of listening to his son, Paul assumes the worst, believes the person who claims to be a victim rather than doing independent research on his own. And when Rudeus tries to speak in his defense, he doesn't listen. And when Rudeus does it again, he smacks him. There are way different forms of how to discipline your children physically. This is not one of the good ones. Now, I know there are some people out there who are no physical at all, and I think they're completely and utterly in the wrong. I mean, for example, I was spanked as a child. I was a very unruly hellion at times. It needed to be done, but never once did my parents like hit me in the head, smack me, force me on the ground or anything like that, or break any bones or anything. It was always just, if anything went wrong, a firm smack on the butt. You're going into timeout. We're going to take your toys. We're going to take your books. Make sure you can't do anything wrong. Now, Rudeus is Paul's first child. That doesn't make what he does acceptable, but it makes it more understandable, and he doesn't really know. He hasn't had to worry about disciplining Rudeus this way because he's maturer for his age than a typical child of that age would be. So these things haven't really come up as much. But to his credit, Paul realizes what he's done. And when he hears Rudeus talking about sarcastically how next time that he hears someone in danger, he'll just step away because that's what being a gray rat is. And he'll just leave later on and never come back. It does bring him to the point of going, okay, I'm in the wrong here. I need to do something about this. Yeah, I forgot to get that image earlier of Happy Sylph. Very nice image. So we do get the Paul in this self-reflection. So that is nice. It's fine. Nothing too good, nothing too bad. And we'll see more of Paul's flaws later on in other episodes. But for now, let's continue on in the summary. Synopsis, I should say. As we get to summer coming in the show, we see that the bullies are still trying to attack them, but they're just not able to do anything because Rudeus is just that much better at magic, and they don't obviously know any magic. They're too young. They don't have the training he does, and Rudeus always beats them back, and he mentions that, and kind of an aside thing that really brings nothing too much of worth other than why she might talk to Paul, that the mother of Samal has a thing for him, which, as we've seen in the village, plenty of people do, and that is, it's somewhat foreshadowy of what's going to happen in the next episode. Kinda. So I'll give it that. So we see that Sylph's training has improved their mana over 6 months, proving Rudeus's earlier hypothesis that, hey, the people of this world just don't get it. If you start as soon as possible, your mana will increase and you'll be able to do incantationless magic, which Sylph wants to learn, as Sylph is eventually able to do, showing that, hey, Rudeus, you're just not that special, which, of course, he takes umbrage at, which, to an extent, I get. You ever been in a situation where there's something you're really good at and you find someone else who may be as good or even better than you? There's a little bit of jealousy that comes that way, so it's understandable. But, of course, Rudeus being Rudeus, he takes it too far. But, to his credit, he continues to teach Sylph how to do incantationless magic, and Sylph is eventually able to do it. So it creates a nice bonding between the two friends there, and Rudeus once again ruins everything by commenting on how Sylph's very handsome and he's jealous, even though, hey, I don't know if you don't have any mirrors in the house, but for your age group, you're not looking that bad, kid. And then he speaks of how he used to have a female childhood friend in the past, and she got married, and he ruins that moment even more by having masturbatory fantasies over her. Did we need that information? Of course we didn't need that information, yet it was provided to us anyway because the author just cares about you and I. You know, he just wants you to think those things that are on his mind for whatever arbitrary reason. And in the midst of this, it rains on them, forcing them to seek shelter at Rudeus's house to get dry and take a bath. He undresses and wonders why Sylph doesn't. And he initially thinks it has to do with being ashamed of the size of their penis. Why? They're 7-ish years old. Sorry. But he tricks Sylph into thinking he's not going to take off his clothes. And in the process, see, I fumbled through all three different forms of pronouns there. So he tricks Sylph, forces Sylph's clothes on, finds out that Sylph is a girl, which makes her cry because she was trying to have this exact same thing not happen. And this causes Paul to come in, and he eventually takes her out. And Paul does take a bath with his son, which a typical thing you would do at that age. And where Paul talks about, you know, well, what he did was wrong. Ruth is very upset. He misread the situation. He legitimately thought that Sylph was a boy. And Rudeus learns that Sylph's real name is Sylphiette, also to be known as Sylphie. So I'll probably flip-flop between the two. So at this point, he wonders if Sylphiette will ever forgive him, which Paul says that she will. This is not a friendship-breaking thing. This is a huge misunderstanding. They're both young, minus the fact that one of them is way older mentally, but we'll get there when we get there. So then Rudeus goes downstairs after they dry off and puts on clothes, and he apologizes to Sylphie for saying this. And then he ruins it by saying that he thought that Sylphie was a boy, which is an innocent thing to say for a child, not so much the adult, which causes her to cry again because, hey, she's a girl. She doesn't want to be thought of as a boy. As Paul remarks that his son might be kind of stupid, which was a pretty good joke. I'll give him that. So later on, while at swordsmanship practice, Rudeus gets advice from Paul, who says women like to see men in their successes and their strengths, but also in their weaknesses. So he asks Rudy to be vulnerable with her and reveals that Sylphie has been there the entire time. Rudeus tries to ask forgiveness. He flubs it initially by saying, well, she should really grow out her hair, and that way no one would ever be able to confuse her as being a boy anymore, which is kind of his intent. But she rejects that outright, which is fine to do. It's her hair. She can do whatever she wants. Even though, yeah, it would make her look more feminine, but that's her choice. She gets to make the decision on that factor. Quit telling her what to do, Rudeus. So he says it feels like she doesn't like him anymore, and that's a more innocent thing to say, a more childish thing to say. And she says that she doesn't hate him and asks for things to go back to the way that they were before, and they make up. As Paul realizes, he just kind of taught his son how to, like, get into girls' good graces at such a young age, which, I don't know, buddy, you've been doing that the entire time you've been teaching your son. Why is this any different? Yeah. Rudeus's nature right now as a scumbag, because, hey, to this day, I still think of Rudeus as a scumbag. He has made improvements. We're obviously not there as far as this show is concerned, but where I'm at in the anime, he's still a scumbag in many regards. And it continues on here in how he treats this whole situation with Sylph, and how he talks about Sylph in his own head. About how, oh, he's just so handsome. And, you know, I had a childhood friend in the past. I was a girl, though. And I have these fantasies about her even to today. And guess what I did with them? Well, you don't have to spell it out to me. I know you. The moment you mentioned that, the warning, my spider sense went off. And I knew exactly what was going to happen. But let's get to the whole bath scene. With the two of them there, like, hey, you're going to get cold. You can't be in those clothes for too long. Naturally, the thing to do would be go into a warm bath, dry off, and you'll be fine. But Rudeus, mentally about 41 by now, remember that, has come to the point where he legitimately thinks that Sylph is a boy. Now, that's fine. I mean, you can, there are plenty of people I screw up the gender on all the time. I screw up the sex on all the time. Like, you can, your brain looks and says, oh, I see these features, therefore it's got to be that. And you're dead wrong. It happens. Especially for a child, if Rudeus was mentally a child, this is a perfect example of just being a dumb kid. But remember, there's a larger mind in there. One with far more life experience, one that was emotionally stunted for 20-some years. That makes sense. But one that should be way more intelligent than the Rudeus we see in this show. And when he comes down to apologize to her, the Rudeus, who is 41 years old mentally, shouldn't say the things that he says to her in the way he does. The Rudeus, who is actually 7 years old, both physically and mentally, yes, of course, say this stupid thing because you're a boy. Boys say stupid stuff like this all the time. Of course, that's going to get her upset, but he doesn't know that if he's just 7 years old mentally, but he's not. And yes, Rudeus is not the most amazing person when it comes to conversation. That's been established before in the show, but to flub it this bad, I'm calling a little BS on it. And then the whole, well, if you just grew out your hair, then this wouldn't be a problem. You'd look more like a girl. It's like, even if that's true, which, yeah, probably would be, as we do see. Nah, I'm not going to spoil that. Hey, you don't say that to someone. That's her choice. But he just has to act like scum because he's Rudeus. So, that's that. This episode, not the best, not the worst, is what it is. So we're going to move on from there to emergency family meeting. And in this episode, we start with Rudeus congratulating Zenith because now she's pregnant. And she remarks that he won't have to feel lonely anymore. He's got a new brother, a sister in the womb there. They're going to be a larger family. It's a very happy moment. That gets unbalanced. Not too long after that initial conversation, when Lilia reveals she's pregnant too. With everyone immediately realizing Paul is the father. And he immediately apologizes for that. Zenith smacks him as we go to the opening credits. And in those credits, we see Zenith crying with Lilia as Paul's unresponsive and Rudeus is caught in the middle of it all. So this is a very effective opening scene that leads to some darkness in this family that doesn't get properly addressed as much as I would like it to later on. Granted, there are events out of their control that cause some of this not to happen, but definitely conversation should be had beforehand, or we should have seen them on screen. But this is a very effective opening in how there's this moment of joy. Hey, Rudeus is going to be a big brother. That's great. I have 3 siblings, some of which I even like. That's terrible. I do love my siblings. I'm just being harsh because I'm the oldest. Like, it was joyous. I even named my siblings. That's how much I was interested in them as a kid. Like, I had a part in that process. It's a great thing to be an older brother. It's a great thing to have younger siblings who depend on you in certain aspects. But not Lilia's fault. She has to tell him at some point. She too is pregnant. And there's only one culprit in the room. And it's Paul. Oh, Paul. We'll talk about Paul in a little bit. So let's just move on in the synopsis. Where we see Zenith asking Lilia what she plans to do, as the both of them are sitting across the table from one another, both very, shall we say, in not hysterics, but just being completely and utterly overwhelmed by what's happening. Aunt Lilia just calmly says that she's going to help Zenith give birth to her kid, and then she's going to leave for her hometown after that, which is a month's ride to the south. Paul tries to speak, but Zenith shuts him up. Oh, and earlier, like, hey, he's a grown man, probably shouldn't be smacking him, but I definitely understand why. I'm not going to talk too much against that idea, but still not the best action to take. So at this point in time, Rudeus notes that it's winter, so he thinks on how it'll be impossible for them to survive, let alone have a child in the midst of all that, if Lilia and the baby leave. And he reflects on how kind Lilia has been to him, and then ruins that sentimental moment by mentioning how she found the holy relic, yet didn't throw it away, which becomes a huge motivator for why he does what he does next. Not, hey, this is screwed up, this whole situation's wrong. Nope. Why does he come and intervene? Because she didn't snitch on him when she found the holy relic in his room. Our main character, everyone. So Rudeus, in light of all that, intervenes, pointing out that Lilia can't say no to Paul. So she is not the one in the wrong here. And he even lies and says that Paul threatened her, which Paul knows is a lie. Rudeus knows is a lie. And he decides he's going to throw Paul under the bus to save everyone because this is what he thinks is the best idea. And he says out loud that he wants to be friends with both babies. And he wants to be a big brother to them. And he doesn't want Lilia and the baby to leave forever. And his protests do persuade Zenith to let them stay. And then she tells Paul that they're going to have a talk later. And we do see later, Lilia watches Paul take out his anger on Rudeus in sword training. And she kind of wonders why it's working out for her, saying she was the one who seduced him. And this came after multiple times. She lives in the same house Rudeus does. So what she's going to hear almost every single night, if not every night, the two of them going at it. So, unable to keep it contained any longer, she engineered a vent so that her door was open, and as he was walking by, he saw her naked and bathing, which enticed him to have sex with her when he falls to temptation, which she says that Rudeus kind of figured out. And she's disliked Rudeus this whole time because of his perversions. I can't imagine why, but decides to ignore that in regressive characterization, as thanks for saving her, and says the child will one day serve Lord Rudeus. So I mentioned it earlier, polygamy. As I understand the world we're living in here, as I did a little more research into what is said in the web novel and the light novel, polygamy is the expectation. Typically, I think vastly primarily, man having multiple wives. Zenith and Paul's marriage is actually weird in that he's supposed to be monogamous with her because she is a devotee of a goddess whose name escapes me, who commands monogamy. And he gave all that up for her because he loves Zenith that much, but Paul is still Paul. He's still a scoundrel. Zenith should have known better to an extent. And he did what he did. So what are the ethics of polygamy? Like, Christian, you sound like you're against polygamy. I am. Well, doesn't it happen multiple times in the Bible, that same book you said you read from? Yes, it does. And if you look at all those marriages, things go bad when you have more than one wife, when you are unfaithful to that wife. Abraham doesn't have a son. Sarah says, well, I'm barren, so just use my handmaiden, Hagar. Didn't ask her about her thoughts on the matter. A son is created from that union before the son that God is supposed to get to them, which causes issues of inheritance and all that. Now, after Sarah dies, Abraham does marry again, so that's perfectly fine. You can marry again as a widower. That creates more children that way. Then we go to Jacob. He is tricked into marrying the wrong woman in Laban's house. He wants to marry Rachel, but instead he's forced to marry Leah. Is tricked into having relations with her, but doesn't like that. Leah was consulted. She really liked him, but he doesn't like her the same way she loves him. So he marries Rachel too. And as a special bonus, gets their handmaidens. So four wives, everyone, which causes immense inner conflict in that family from one sister trying to one up the other, using their handmaidens, who, by the way, haven't been consulted for this. They're just voluntold to be with this man. And then we get later on, that happens with Hannah being the second wife of her husband, whose name escapes me. Elkanah, is that his name? And her being barren and thinking that the other wife has been shown more favorable, has been looked at in a more favorable light by her husband. She says isn't true, but we don't know for sure. Like, that wouldn't have happened if there had just been one wife. David has multiple wives. Oh, by the way, if you look at your Old Testament law, polygamy is not forbidden, except for the king. And David breaks that rule multiple times over. Even being a man, the Bible explicitly calls as a man after God's own heart. He's still a human being, still screws up. And as a result of that, there are succession crises. There's sexual assault in the family. There's multiple things that happen as a result of him having these multiple wives. The whole Bathsheba incident. He sees a woman who's not his wife and gets her husband killed, marries her. And before this, they had had sex with each other. And a child is born. This is stillbirth. That never would have happened if David had kept things in line with what he knew was right and wrong. And guess who learns from this? Well, like father, like son, Solomon comes into the picture. 700 wives, 300 concubines. And of those wives and concubines, they lead him astray from wisdom. They lead him astray from God. Every single time that I can recall in Scripture, when you see polygamy, it is evil. It is wrong. God uses that situation to make good things happen. We get the 12 tribes of Israel from all that. We get the Davidic line from all of that. But it's not God's intent. It's not the good thing God wanted in that marriage being just between that man and woman. Now, obviously in this series, we don't really have a Jesus Christ figure. We don't seem to have a tribe out there who would be our Israel component. And I don't expect that from a isekai fantasy made in Japan. You know what? Because I've said it before on other shows, there's less than 2% of the population that's Christian. So to them, Christianity is this weird mystical religion in the same way that Shintoism and Buddhism are to us. So for the polygamy in this series, it's going to happen multiple times over. I know spoilers about who Rudeus ends up with, and it's not just one woman, I'll put it that way. So it's a huge ethical concern, not only in this series, but also in real life. But the idea, you can't show the same amount of love to another woman that you do to another woman. Like, there's going to be differences. You're going to treat them a little differently. It's going to cause friction in the marriage. And that's why we're not supposed to do it. That's why when we get to the Gospels, we get to Paul's writings in the epistles. It's like, hey, be the husband of one wife. Things are a lot simpler that way. Things are a lot better that way. But let's look at Paul and Rudeus real quick here. Both of them are scum of the earth. Rudeus is motivated to keep his family together after what Paul has done to ruin that. Rudeus lies, throws his dad under the bus, and from what I understand in the light novel and the web novel, he actually speaks with his mom later and tells her he lied about all that just to keep things together, which that kind of gets in the whole debate of when to lie, when not to lie, or is lying ever acceptable? I'd argue maybe in this situation, because the end goal is preserving life. And that's like, I just talked about this, and let nothing move you for Exodus with the midwives, and as well as Moses' mother lying about the children and saying it's just too fast to Hebrew women. They just keep coming out before we're able to get to them. Or Moses' mother hiding him away, and the status quo of the land is like all male children are to be executed. I would say they're all lying to preserve life, and that's a good thing, and that's why they're rewarded for it. So I could make the argument here that Rudeus is making the right call to lie. I'm not entirely there. Maybe that's just me not liking Rudeus, but I will acknowledge this scheme works. Probably shouldn't, but it works. And because of it, Lilia and the baby are not forced to flee. There's still friction in the house. There's still some healing that needs to get done. But it's not as bad as it could have been. And let's not forget that this is motivated by the fact that Lilia didn't snitch on him. Not wholly. There are other reasons. Like, Rudeus does legitimately like her, and he does want to see her not die and a baby not die. But what was his motivating factor to make the call to lie in the first place? Oh, it was because she didn't rat him out for possessing the holy relic. Our main character, everyone. Let's go to Paul. There's more for Paul later on in this episode, but for right now, there is no conceivable way for Paul to have slept with Lilia, even with her consent, for this to have been a consented encounter. He is the master. She is a maid. He is married to another woman. There are power dynamics here that do not match up well. Even though Lilia herself says she wanted it, open up the opportunity, he's the man in the relationship. He's supposed to say no. And he took advantage of her wanting it. Temptation just doesn't mean, well, I mean, she's right there. Why not just do it? No, it means moving past that, not ignoring it, confronting it, and being, hey, no, this is not happening. And Paul, being the playboy that he is, the scumbag that he is, doesn't say no. And as a result, well, now there's two babies happening. The babies aren't mistakes. Don't get me wrong there. What led to them was sinful. But the babies themselves, they're not the problem here. They need to be taken care of. They need to be loved. And to his credit, we'll see he actually does that. But let's not forget this happens by him taking advantage of her who is in a lesser position than him, regardless of whether she wants it or not, that causes this encounter to happen. And that is horrendous. So let's look at some cute pictures of the babies real quick as we move on to the next part of the summary there. So we see later on that Norn, the blonde child on the right there on YouTube, if you're watching there, who is Zena's child, and Aisha, who is on the left, the redheaded child, Lilia's child, are born. And Paul is playing with them, so obviously something has happened in between the babies being announced where, like, there is less friction in the house, not totally gone, but where he can act in this goofy manner. Neither mother is really upset at him for doing that. That some things have been patched up to an extent. So as he's playing with them, they start to cry. And this causes both mothers to retrieve their children to comfort them, as they note that how it's very different from when Rudeus was a baby. You know, since they actually cry, you know, like real babies would do without the mind of a 34-year-old man implanted in them. So Lilia, after this, starts to open up more to Rudeus, telling him that she and Paul had both studied swordsmanship together, and Paul had, as part of his training, had started slacking off in his studies one night, assaulting her while she slept, forcing him to flee after that incident. Rudeus, later on, while training with Paul, says and mentally says that his father's scum, but he respects him for his strength. not mutually exclusive. So we learn through this that there are three sword styles in this world. You have Sword God, Water God, and North God. And Paul is advanced in all three. As they're having these mock fights, Rudy uses earth magic, which Paul calls cheating. And he says, hey, you're never going to improve this way, and you're never going to be like him. Rudy counters that by saying he doesn't want to be the kind of man who almost destroyed his marriage and tells him to limit himself to Zenith, which, hey, I'm on Rudy's side here. Yeah, it's great. He's got two lovely lives here that came from his poor decision-making. Well, one of them did. That's great. Those kids are wonderful. Love to hold them, take care of them. But Rudy is right. He should have just stuck with Zenith, who, by the way, has never shown anything that could, even if this were some other, you know how some romance novels or whatever try and justify it. It's like, oh, well, he or she, they were just so emotionally distant from me, and they never wanted to have sex. And they try and justify, well, that means it's okay to them having this affair, whether it's physical or emotional. They don't play that. I'll give it that. Because Zenith is very for it, because as we've noted, every single night they can hear what's going on there. And part of this comes with, oh, it's worried about the pregnancy. You know, that's why we were abstaining for a little bit. It's like, no. Now, granted, this is more modern knowledge. I believe it's actually okay. You know, at that stage, even later into the pregnancy. But I'm not a doctor. I'm open to be corrected on that. So there is no real excuse for why it's okay for Paul to do what he does to Lilia. So that's that. I got to my explanations in the middle of the summary. Sorry. So continuing on from there, Paul then teases Rudeus about Sylphie because, you know, he can't talk about his own problems and says that she'll be a beauty one day. As Rudeus remarks that Paul and he speak the same language. Scumbaggery. Paul mentions Rudeus going to school, but then he quickly disregards the idea because, hey, he's proud of his son. His son right now knows how to read, write, and do arithmetic. And then he ruins that by mentioning that he'd probably be bullied if he ever went to school. And really, if you go there, the girls just aren't that pretty, just not that athletic or attractive, you know, like your mom is. So you were so good, Paul, and then you ruined it. So later on, we see Rudeus and Sylphie practice magic. As he notes, she's getting better than him, and she knows he's been acting a little weird. He says it's because he hasn't advanced in a while, and she asks him if he's leaving. He says he might. She tells him that he can't because she doesn't want him to leave. She wants to maintain their friendship. She likes him. She wants him to be around and continue being her friend, which he promptly ruins the moment in his mind by talking about how he'll mold Sylphie into the ideal woman. Our main character, mentally older than her by quite some distance of time. He then fantasizes about this in the house, which gets stopped by Paul, who reveals that, hey, he receives a letter from Roxy, who has written to tell Rudeus that she's improved as a mage. I think she got king level water magic at this point in time, and that she's in the Sharona kingdom serving as a tutor for the seventh prince, who's a total pervert like him, and that they are very similar to one another. And tells Rudeus to enroll at Rinoa University to study magic more. We see the seventh prince walk up behind her, grope and molest her, and oh, she turns, puts him on fire, and that makes everything okay, guys. You know, the pervert got what was coming to him. No, he didn't. He just on fire for a little bit. I hate when anime does that. I hate when that worst things need to happen. And yes, of course, you know, he's the prince. She's just a tutor, but still, like, gosh, why? Why was that scene necessary? So, and not being told, like, hey, you need to study more, you need to go to this academy, Rudeus agrees. So he asks, while they're eating, for Paul to fund both Sylphie and him to go to school there. And Paul says no to this, citing a couple of reasons, among them like their dependence on one another and that they're not rich enough to afford two tuitions, which is perfectly fair on both accounts on his end. So Rudeus then asks that he be given a job so that he can pay for Sylphie's tuition, and Paul agrees to this idea. Now, as the two are training once more, we see a wagon come by, revealing a beast person, a female named Ghislaine. I always screw up the pronunciation. An old companion of both Paul and Zenas from their adventuring days. Paul then challenges Rudeus to a fight, as Rudeus tries to get the advantage by using magic, but his swordsmanship skills. Gotta love that lisp coming in. His swordsmanship skills are far superior, and he knocks Rudeus out, knowing it's going to be difficult for his son to leave Sylphie behind. So he did the difficult thing, beat him up. I suppose giving a child brain trauma, that counts as loving in this scenario. Rudeus then wakes up on the wagon with Ghislaine and introduces himself to her as they leave for the job that Paul had asked her to help Rudeus with, and we'll get that in our next episode. So thoughts on this? Continuing on the idea of Rudeus as a grown man in the child's body. This is maddening. These scenes we get earlier. It's so outrageous for him to be thinking the way that he does. He is having these thoughts about a girl who is about 7 years old and says, well, time to wife her up in a couple of years. Forgetting, once again, that he hasn't revealed who he actually is to her. That there's a huge disparity mentally with each other. The whole master-student apprenticeship thing is something that needs to be addressed. And that she, without knowing a lot of this information, is going to be hurt if this ever comes up and she learns about the real him and all the thoughts he's been having about her, if this were a better written series, that he could have stopped by just, hey, like, you're my best friend. Let's talk. I'm going to tell you something that's going to sound strange, but I trust you. I want you to know I'm not from here. You think of all the people in the world. Like, sure, he should tell his parents too, but you don't think that Sylphie's going to, like, listen to what he has to say and believe him? It's just scummy behavior, which he has learned from his scum of a father, who gets more points in his favor, because Paul's one of those characters I like and I hate, because there's moments like, okay, yes. Yes, that's good what you just said. That's good what you just did there. It is good that he has found a way. He swallowed his pride, because we're going to see later on that it took a lot of him to get this set up where Rudeus could have a job. That's great. But he's also the same one who beats his son, knocks him out rather than, you know, explaining the situation to him and putting him where he needs to be. For the thing that he specifically requested to do. That's just awful. So, yeah, we're ending this episode, imagine that, once again, on a bit of a sour note. And we're going to go to the scores for the episodes. Oh, by the way, I'm changing them up. I'm going to a letter grade system. I just thought it was better than the, you know, blank out of 10. So, for episode 3, I'm giving it a B-. Episode 4, I'm giving it a D+. Mostly because of the events that happened in this episode. Paul's scum nature, Rudeus's scummy nature, all the things that happen as a result of those two being that way. Oh, and I forgot to mention that Lily as well, just being like, oh, well, I know he's been acting very lustful. He's been ever since he was a kid looking at me with lustful eyes, but he saved my baby. And I'm going to ignore all that. Huh? No. Yeah, it's great. He stood up and defended you. Now that's wonderful, but that doesn't mean he doesn't need to change. Doesn't mean he doesn't need to be called out for these things that you should have done a way lot earlier, even if Zena didn't believe you. But that's it for that. As always, I have my gripes with this series. I have the things I like. I have the things I don't like. So, thank you, everyone, for listening. Went on way longer than I thought I would. I should know better. Please, you get a chance to leave a 5-star review on your podcasting platform of choice. If you're listening to this on podcast, it's finally up on Apple Podcasts after I fought tooth and nail for it to get on there. It's outrageous how much work that took. But if you're not on podcasts and you're on YouTube right now on the Anazal Ministries podcast page or the Systematic Ecology page, please leave a like on this video. Comment down below. Subscribe to those channels. We'd love to have you here for more content. This podcast is separate from those, but at the same time, being a part of the network, being a little part of Systematic Ecology, and that we're covering fictional media and all that jazz. You can email me at whyidontlikepodcast@gmail.com. If you're interested in my own fiction writing, you can find my works at starvingwritersguild.com or on Amazon if you search the name MC Ashley. You can also find me podcasting on Systematic Ecology and Let Nothing Move You. Special thanks to Joshua Knoll for the music he provides for the podcast. And let me actually put that up there. A lot of time discussing what I don't like about Mushoku Tensei. But you know what I do like? You listeners. I like you. So see ya, Space Cowboy.